This edition of Commodity Week was recorded the week ending Friday, December the 26th. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Mike Wolverton of Kansas State University. On this holiday week, we've taken it pretty easy. We heard from Mike on Tuesday and Wednesday. We discussed the commodity markets in depth with Paul Cooley from ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Both discussions were targeted intentionally toward ethanol and this program. We'll hear the interview with Paul in a moment and then Mike Wolverton later. But first, here are the weekly settlement prices. At the CME Group, nearby March wheat had a high this week of 602.5, a low at 553, a settlement price there at 599 and a quarter, up 36 cents from last week. July wheat at $6.23 gained 35 and a quarter. March corn futures are 414.5 high on the week, a low at 376 and a quarter. Settlement price up 31.5 cents. March corn settled $4.12 a bushel, up 31.5 from week to week. December corn for next year at 456.5. The 09 contract settled 31.5 cents higher at $4.56 for the December corn. January soybeans at $9.63 on the high, the low at $8.62 1/4. Settlement price at $9.51 3/4, 83.5 cents higher on the week for the January beans. November futures for the new crop at $9.79 1/2. Settled 80 and a half cents higher. December live cattle futures an 87.50 top this week, a low at 85.20. Settlement price there 20 cents lower. December live cattle at $85.90 at the end of the week. January feeder cattle a 92.82 1/2 settlement price on the week, down 67.5 cents from last Friday. February lean hog futures $61.75 a hundredweight for the high, the low at $58.90. And February lean hog settled at $58.95, down $2.75 on the week. Again, we talked with Paul Cooley Wednesday afternoon. Here's all of that discussion.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, let's take up the marketplace, and maybe I'd like to take it up in a broader scope today than just what happened in the week or the day trade, but rather take a look back over the year and talk about what kind of year it was. It seems to me that it was certainly extraordinary.
It definitely was, Todd. Really a year to remember in the fact that it was such a boom-bust scenario. And we always rather talk about the boom than the bust, but we started out with a boom, went up, major economic problems of basically outside of agriculture that really created the bust, so to speak. And it started with the financial crisis with the big money center banks, the subprime lending, and, of course, finished up with the crude oil basically going up close to $150 a barrel and, basically dropping off to $34 a barrel, and talk about a tremendous change in the economies. It's the worst one that I've seen since I've been in this business, since the early 1970s.
Well, the week prior to this, I was on the road with Daryl Good and Scott Irwin and the Farm Doc team out at the Illinois Farm Economics Summits. Scott made some presentations about ethanol and Daryl, of course, about the commodity markets. And there was a lot of discussion within those presentations about how the corn market itself had changed because of the value of ethanol, the amount of corn that was being used in the ethanol industry. And I think probably it may change the way that things happen at this radio station in terms of what is reported. Part of that, and maybe you can explain some of this or give your opinion on it, was that the value of corn is far more hooked to the value of crude oil, and that there really, according to the ag economists, were sorts of four sorts of things that were hooked together now: crude oil, the RBOB gasoline price, ethanol, and corn, and that they all worked in concert to set a price for each other, but mostly for the corn market. Your opinion there, and then whether you had to adjust your own thinking over time as to how these all work together.
Well, the answer is yes, and it is the topic of conversation not only there, but in in commodity circles and the new political circles that's going to develop in Washington. We understand that depressed corn prices related to depressed energy prices, and it's related to, instead of using 4 billion bushels of corn next year, maybe using only 3.7 billion bushels of corn for ethanol. I tremble when we are so close to becoming the ethanol is such a wonderful additive to the gasoline supply, and it has given the American farmer some added economic stability. And think what it would be like if we didn't have ethanol energy to help fuel and take care of corn demand. I think the bottom line is that we're hopeful three major things happen this coming year. The EPA will ultimately increase the blend of ethanol from 10% up to 12 to 14% because of the energy bill, mandating the energy bill. And then also we think the new president-elect is going to be rather supportive to renewable energies. And, of course, the third thing that we're looking at is that hopefully with the new economic stimulus package that it will stabilize not only ethanol, the farm community, but also Main Street and Wall Street. Hopefully those three things will happen next year, that we will have a better year, and also stabilize prices of corn at some slightly higher levels.
Would you like to crystal ball for me what you think prices might be? Could there be poor 50 cash prices for corn? Again, $10 cash prices for soybeans, potentially?
Well, let's go to the easy ones first. Before the market closed today, I asked the group in the commodity office here what they thought the stock market would be a year from now, and we came up with a non-controversial 2,000 points higher. Somewhere in that 10,000 to 11,000 price area.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the corn commodity, we think it's going to be a tough first 6 months in the corn market. We will see price improvement based in, as far as better demand, and also we think better energy prices. One of the quickest ways, in my opinion, to settle the cheap crude oil price is offer some of the OPEC countries to put some of their oil production in our strategic reserve. We'd give them a glorified warehouse receipt or a certificate of deposit of so many millions of gallons of oil in our strategic reserve, and then we would pay for it whenever they wanted to turn around and sell it to us. As a result of that, we'd be taking care of energy policy, also stabilizing this overproduction, and working hand in hand to, make things a little more comfortable on the energy front, and also indirectly stabilize corn prices. The energy deal is a big problem. OPEC is basically playing a hand of somewhat slower production of oil. But as you mentioned, until we do get oil production and prices above the $45 to $50 a barrel rate, it's going to hurt the corn price indirectly.
Where do you think that the consumption has slacked off? Is it mostly U.S.? Is it the rest of the world? And this is consumption for oil at this point, and the price of crude rather than the price of corn.
I think it's an easy answer in the fact that the $100 to $150 trip in crude oil was just commodity speculators and world speculation, and we did start to put the brakes on crude from 75 to 100. I think it's a worldwide deal, and we did start to see economic contraction in the U.S. and also the world, and we did see this energy reduction. It was a lot more severe. I when we look back on it, that maybe it was the second or third trip the president made to Saudi Arabia. But that extra half a million barrels of oil they started to produce, it more or less changed the balance of the equation and basically got oil prices stabilized to where it did back off from its high of $148 or $150 a barrel.
Well, what do you think would be a good price for a barrel of oil? What would Paul Cooley like to see?
Well, you know, there's nothing that I want to see work more hand-in-hand, and I think there does have to be some sort of major partnerships with the consuming nations as well as the producing nations. But somewhere in this $50 to $75 a barrel deal would, bring a lot of stability in the marketplace and in the agricultural sector. I think it is important that the political decisions of the new administration are very proactive to renewable energy, ethanol. And I think it's going to be an important investment, and I think it's based on three quick things. We're energy independency. It does create a lot of good, high-paying jobs in mid-America, and also it does bring economic stability to the Midwest that's long been left out of some economic prosperity.
Well, let's work with those three just a bit. Energy independence, probably a primary concern of Washington, D.C., after the terrorist attacks and 9/11. The Midwest and the economy here, very important today. Will there be the willpower on the first part of that to continue to provide tax relief and incentives of all sorts for ethanol production in the Midwest?
I think so. And a couple things. The state of Iowa basically made the new president-elect president of the United States, and of course, he campaigned in probably every little small town in the state of Iowa. And, he did, of course, Illinois is a big ethanol producer, and he did visit a lot of ethanol plants. We understand he does see the economic stability, farm trucks hauling corn into those plants, the renewable energy, the green effect, so to speak, the 24 or 5 better-paying jobs in the community, several good-paying jobs of engineers and plant managers, and it did create a lot of economic stability and new blacktop driveways and taxes to the local community. So I think he sees that as a opportunity to divest ourselves from the oil energy consumption. And also there's a group that we also have to say is this clean coal is also a big part of this total equation, and that's a big benefactor for the state of Illinois as well.
Do you think the second part, the clean coal, will actually get pushed through?
I think it will be, and of course the carbon dioxide, clean coal and that is two things. Of course, energy plant at Mattoon will be a big part of.
Yeah, and then what about carbon sequestration? Do you think
that's a big factor too? And of course, that's the big thing that has to be handled to really push coal into the next era.
Just a couple of minutes left. What do you want to take up on the bean market or the corn market, wheat? Anything in particular you think farmers should be aware of as they move through 2009?
I think that we are seeing definite yield reduction in Argentina and Brazil as far as this dryness is concerned. The farmer, I think, at this $9 level will and reward the marketplace. I'm a little suspect, and I think people in the country are suspect, that we will see 5.5 million more acres of soybeans. One of the things that we do have to hope for is some economic stability to the livestock industry. That's cattle, hogs, and poultry. And it's not just a problem in the U.S., but it's worldwide. And hopefully that big marketplace for feed usage will also improve with an improved livestock industry.
Yeah, what are the pitfalls there? Is it?
Well, I think the pitfalls is that some of the big users like Pilgrim's Pride had been beat up economically. The broiler industry uses a lot of corn and soybean meal. The hog industry's also been beat up, and of course a lot of the commodities that we export into the world market those countries have just backed away and have created some very cheap prices of cattle, hogs, and poultry. And as a result of that, hopefully the livestock industry will be supported, and it'll also gain economic success with the corn and soybean people.
All right. Any final word from you before
let's
go?
Hey, have a nice Christmas, and we'll be talking to you next year.
Indeed we will. Thanks much.
Have a nice one.
Thanks, Paul. Paul Cooley is with Adium Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. In 2 minutes, we'll continue our look at trends in the ethanol industry with Mike Wolverton from Kansas State University in Manhattan, Kansas. You're listening to the December 26th edition of Commodity Week.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Winter weather kept a tight grip on Illinois this week, beginning with the surge of Arctic air last weekend. Very cold air, accompanied by winds from 30 to 40 miles per hour, blasted across Illinois last Sunday. Daytime temperatures remained in the single digits, and with the gusty winds, wind chill temperatures were 15 to 30 degrees below zero. In northern Illinois, ground blizzard conditions reduced visibilities to near zero in some locations and made for extremely hazardous travel. Temperatures did warm a bit on Monday, but then began to steadily rise with the approach of the next weather system as winds swung into the south. Unfortunately, it is generally hard to displace the cold, dense air near the ground, and another round of snow, sleet, and freezing rain plagued central and northern Illinois into Christmas Eve day. This system departed in time for high pressure to spread over Illinois and bring most of the state a pleasant Christmas day. However, the next weather system that affected us at the end of the week was already pushing into the western United States. There aren't any signs that the active weather pattern we have been in will be changing soon, so we are not likely to see much of a change the last week of December, with weather systems affecting Illinois and the Midwest every 2 to 3 days. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded the week ending Friday, December the 26th. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Earlier in the week, we discussed the energy markets with K-State Extension's Mike Wolverton. We started, as always, by saying hello.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, let's start with the good news and bad news. If there's any good news, maybe we should start with that. But if not, we can delve into the bad news and what the price of crude has done to the profitability of the ethanol industry across the Midwest.
Well, it's pretty dismal. And what I'm trying to do here at the end of the year is take a look at where we are now and where we might go in 2009. And you're certainly right about what oil price has done to the ethanol industry. Oil prices come down $100 a barrel, and it's brought the price of ethanol down considerably. Also, price of corn has come down, but price of ethanol has come down more than corn, and that has put ethanol producers in a negative situation. They're now losing, according to my little economic model here, about 20 cents a gallon on each gallon of ethanol they sell. The financially sound ethanol plants are still making money and can survive, largely due to the DDG sales, which is offsetting the loss in ethanol. But there's no doubt about it, it's a difficult time for ethanol producers right now.
This comes back to a squeeze on the top side when prices were really high for the price of corn. Verison, of course, got into trouble at that point. I suspect there might be a few other plants that would be in the same boat. Was there a time where they were really profitable other than prior to March of last year?
Well, I think even up until midsummer, the ethanol plants were doing quite well. And then when the price of oil fell and the price of corn fell, and that's when they started getting into trouble. What the big problem Verison had was that they had contracted to buy corn at very high prices and ended up then processing that corn into ethanol and selling it at low prices. So they really got themselves in a squeeze. Had to declare bankruptcy, and the bankruptcy judge then allowed them to break their contracts with farmers. So they got out of that high price, those high-priced corn contracts. But there's a price to pay for that as well, because I'm sure there are some farmers that will never do business with Verison again.
Well, I have a question about that. Daryl Good and I traveled last week with the Illinois Ag Economic, Farm Economic Summits, and we had a discussion about this, a very short discussion, as to what a corn contract might mean if the court system was going to come in and break it. Has there been much discussion legally or among ag economists about the wide-ranging prospects for what that court decided?
Well, I've had discussions with farmers about this, and they were asking me, well, should I go ahead and deliver my corn on the contract? And I said, well, you're legally obligated to deliver on the contract. But then the problem is getting payment. I think farmers are really put in a really difficult situation here, because they have to deliver on their contracts, then in many cases stand in line with other creditors to get the money back. And so this is going to drag out for quite some time until those farmers are compensated for their corn.
The flip side of that, of course, was that Verison was using, I think, the futures markets as a strategy. And the futures markets got their money.
They did. And so, you know, it's just Verison is in a terrible situation right now. They're one of the three largest ethanol producers in the United States, or were. They have now closed down some plants. But this industry is going through a tremendous consolidation in 2009, I think. Someone will buy the Verison assets and run them. But it probably won't, the Verison name probably will disappear, because I just don't think people want to do business with them anymore.
Well, they won't want to do business with them. You're thinking that the capacity that's there will be purchased and won't be idled. What does that mean for the prospects for the industry over 2009 then?
Well, I think we have to look a little bit to the political support side of this, because Congress raised the ethanol blending rate to 10.2%. Which would create a demand for about 14 billion gallons of ethanol. And this past year, 2008, we were in a slight overcapacity situation in the ethanol industry. In 2009, we're going to be in an undercapacity situation. So I think that bodes well for the ethanol industry. Of course, everyone's waiting to see what this new administration's policies on renewable energy will be. But so far, people are happy with the team that President-elect Obama has put together.
Do you have an idea of what the blending mandate, and my understanding is that it's by company, but what the blending mandate is and what happens if they don't happen to meet those mandates, should capacity not be there?
Well, I've taken a look at that, and from what I can tell, there are no mandate police out there checking up on ethanol plants. Up until now, we've relied on the carrot of the blenders' tax credit to get the gasoline blenders to buy ethanol. But that blender's tax credit is due to sunset at the end of 2009, and we'll have to then rely on the stick. And so the mandate then will have to kick in. And so this will play itself out in 2009 as we look ahead at what's going to happen to government policy with respect to ethanol.
I think my understanding is that there is an economic incentive on the other side, too, that if they don't meet the mandate, that they may end up taking a charge one way or the other.
Well, that's the stick. And
right.
And so we're going to have to see how that works. You know, it's interesting. We're just now celebrating the one-year anniversary of the Energy Security and Independence Act of 2007. Up until then, ethanol was an additive to gasoline as an oxygenate. But that 2007 Act then now requires the use of ethanol and other renewable fuels to reduce the dependence on foreign oil.
Right.
And so we've kind of changed our government policy with respect to ethanol, and that has allowed Congress then to raise the mandate above that which would just call for oxygenate. So we're really playing in a new ballgame right now.
You think Congress will have the political will to stay the course?
That's going to be the big question, Todd. When we see oil price down in the $30 range, below $40, It's going to be a test of our political will to carry on with this renewable energy initiative, of which ethanol and other biofuels are part of. Right now, I think it's there because I think the political will is there because people are still concerned about being dependent on foreign oil producers and what that might what we might see in the coming years. And so for right now, the political will is there. But we'll have to see what happens in this next year.
About 2.5 minutes left. I'd like to switch gears just a bit to discuss the relationship between corn, ethanol, and crude oil, if I could.
So there
seems to be, of the last not quite 18 months, but maybe 9 or 10 months, certainly a relationship that has developed over 18 months, but that has hooked corn, crude, ethanol, and the RBOB together in some form. Do you think that that will stay in place given the load price of crude oil? Or are there other things that could unhook this relationship?
Well, this relationship has been pretty closely tied together, oil, ethanol, and corn prices. And we've seen this huge drop in oil price, and along with it, ethanol and corn prices have dropped. I think this next year, 2009, we're going to test that relationship. And I think the thing that may be the test is the corn plantings in the spring of 2009. Current estimates are for planting about 82 million acres, but my calculations are if we're going to meet the ethanol mandate, we're going to need 86 million acres of corn to cover all the uses and give a comfortable carryover. And I think we have to also look at the economic situation for 2009. And here we have to come back. It's ironic, really, but the low price of oil and gasoline is really helping to reduce the depth and the length of this recession. The current RBOB price would call for a pump price on gasoline of about $1.45 per gallon. And so the OPEC nations really are, if you want to put it this way, subsidizing the American consumers to the tune of about $20 or $25 billion per month, putting money back in their pocket, helping us come out of this recession. In fact, consumer confidence improved a little bit in this last report. And so I think we're going to see the economy stabilize in 2009, maybe start a recovery at the end of 2009, 2010. And to answer your opening question, Todd, I think that
20 seconds.
Reduction in production and investment in agriculture and in energy markets may be setting us up for the next commodity price cycle. And so when this economy does recover, global economy, we may see commodity prices really spring back up again.
That was K-State Extension's Mike Wolverton. He's a grains and biofuels specialist. If you'd like to hear this conversation again, it's possible. Just visit our website and hit the Commodity Week tab. The address is willag.org. One other note, in the last month, we've added a new service to our Business Day programming. If you can't hear us on the radio or just miss the show and can't get to the web to listen to it after the fact, try dialing this number, 217-333-3434. That's 217-333-3434. We update it at 10:30 and 3:15 Central Time daily. And thanks for listening to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.